As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, Cherry Reds, why Bournemouth-Liverpool is the game of the weekend, and the Philip Billing moment that changed the season. Also, Hendo flies the coop as chickens come home to roost. There's third round replays in the cup with Hot Robins at Ashton Gate, a Hot Rob at Luton, and the ultimate You Are the Ref at Wolves. The WSL returns, but Sam Kerr doesn't. How will Chelsea cope? Plus AFCON, we check the games down in Africa after a spectacular first set of matches. It's all in the Totally Football Show. It's Thursday the 18th of January. How about that, listener? Well done, we made it. We've got a Totally Football Show for you today featuring Natalie Gedra from Sky Sports. Natalie,
hello.
Nice to see you again.
Good to see you.
Also back with us, Kiva O'Neill.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Duncan Alexander.
Hello.
Good.
Yes.
Nice to see you too. Everyone well? Despite the inclement conditions, how cold is it, Kiva?
-4 it was when I got to the office.
It was -5 when I woke up, and on real feel,
yeah.
Well, I don't know how that works, but on real feel it was -9, so it was almost an Everton.
-9?
Almost an Everton.
Almost an Everton. I mean, we giggle, but perhaps you're not doing, listener, because you know that they've been hit with that 10-point penalty, and Met Men say there's more on the way because they and Nottingham Forest charged this week with further breaches of the financial fair play regulations. No word yet on the points penalty. Oh, I went very serious there, didn't I? I'm very serious. But there's so much to enjoy about this week. A, Natalie, we've got 5 Premier League games. There's AFCON Asian Cup going on. Perhaps you were excited by the FA Cup midweek third round replays.
Perhaps.
Okay.
Perhaps I'm as excited as I am with the weather.
Right. Not excited. Of course, you're from Brazil.
Yes, exactly. No, I feel very comforting when you guys are complaining about the weather because
right.
I don't feel like the Brazilian who's always complaining that it's too cold, you know.
Okay. I mean, it gets cold in Brazil. It snows in Brazil. It does.
it's a strong statement.
Okay.
Yeah. It makes the news when it snows.
All right.
I'm from the north and I'm complaining about the weather. So.
Yeah. Well, there you are.
Lovely.
There you are. Well, we got 5 Premier League games this weekend. It's the second half of Match Day 21, which began, of course, last week. Saturday lunchtime, you've got Arsenal, Crystal Palace. Will the Gunners end their losing streak? ? At 5:30, Brentford Forest. 16th against 15th. Both teams uncomfortably close to the bottom three right now. Sunday at 2 o'clock, you've got actual bottom side Sheffield United facing West Ham, who were the big midweek losers in those third round FA Cup replays. At 4:30 on Sunday, Bournemouth-Liverpool. And then on Monday evening, Brighton Wolves. All on TV, as I say, with Bournemouth-Liverpool in the Super Sunday slot. And perhaps rightly so, because those two teams are the top two teams in the form table right now over the last 8 matches, with Bournemouth top and Liverpool second. How about that? How about that, Kiva?
I mean, you just wouldn't have thought, would you? Bournemouth have quietly, like, slowly got it together. Mm. And you felt like, I've watched a little bit of them this season, you felt like it was going to happen because they sort of, like, needed to get up to, like, the fitness levels Iriola wants them to be at. And now they're at them, I feel like it's really helping them because they used to tire after like an hour, they'd sort of drop a little bit. But now they're not doing that. So they're just showing exactly who they are and sort of like, he feels like a little bit of a genius, doesn't he?
Yeah, Iraola. 7 wins, 1 draw, 1 defeat in their last 9. If only you could pinpoint the moment when it all came together.
Oh, given away by Burnley. Here's Billing. Billing, long-range effort over the goalkeeper. And in! Phil Billing from all of 45 yards.
I think we just have. There you are. What was that we just heard?
That was the longest distanced goal in the Premier League so far this season.
Wow.
Philip Billing over James Trafford, who looks as surprised as he often does to see it go in.
That was the 28th of October, and that was Bournemouth's first win of the season.
It was their first win, and I think if they'd have lost that game, you know, I think Iraola still had support within the club, but, you know, that sort of start would have probably been too much. And I think it's quite instructive the way that they've turned it around since then. And, you know, we've got a good article out in The Athletic today by Tom Harris looking at how, you know, when someone like Iraola comes in, it takes a few weeks, a few months even for players to sort of get used to those methods, as Kiva was saying. And they were brave and they stuck with it, and it's paying dividends now. And I think it's actually quite interesting because if you think this transfer window is pretty low key because clubs are essentially scared to buy players because of all the fines that are coming in, well, the advantage you can get is by getting a really good manager. And, you know, Iraola has shown that, you know, the Premier League's already got a lot of good managers, but someone like him coming in, he really does look like, you know, the real deal. And I think a bit like when De Zerbi came in and is now obviously being coveted by other teams, I think Iraola could be in that same place. It's weird. The south coast of England has become this sort of Silicon Valley of managers. So.
Very nice.
On the 4th of November, I was at the Etihad for City Bournemouth, and City beat Bournemouth 6-1. Oh. And to be fair, it was a very harsh scoreline in the end because they didn't play that bad. But what really strikes me remembering that day is I spoke to Iraola afterwards and to the players and to people at the club, and everyone was just so calm. They were like, no, it's fine. It's all good. They're all happy with the manager. Everyone was really on board. And after that, they went on this amazing run with the 7 wins. So they all just seemed very aware of everything that was happening and everything that could happen, that could go wrong or right. And now it's paying off for them. So he's a very interesting character. He was like, you lose 6-1, and he was so calm and even a bit smiley. He's just a lovely guy, you know, and he has his ideas very clear. So it's always nice to hear someone like him talking about football and talking about what he wants from his team.
What did he say, Natalie?
He was upset with the scoreline because he felt like it was a bit unfair because City was just so accurate as they usually are, but that he enjoyed it. He really focused on the positives and on the building of things and the things that he saw there that really matched his ideas and everything that he was communicating to the players. I think he felt that his ideas were getting through the players, and this is why he felt so calm. And the same with the players and the same with everyone at the club. They felt things were happening and nobody was panicking. No one.
Okay. Well, yeah. One positive was it wasn't 9-0, which of course they've recently lost to Liverpool.
You just can't see that happening again now.
No. Although Liverpool did beat them at the Vitality, where they'll be this weekend in the League Cup. Here's a result that I certainly don't remember. They went there in League Cup in November.
I was there.
Oh, were you there, Keith?
I nearly didn't get back. It was like a storm. And I spoke to the manager after the game, and I had, I think, like 5 minutes with him. Uh-huh. And I was just like, can I have 10, 20? Like, I feel like you just want to pick his brain more because he's just like, once he starts talking about something, you're just really intrigued by it. But that come across to me as well with the players in recent games as well. They've just got this energy, like, they were losing games, but it's going to turn around. And, like, Luton have had that in a way as well, and I think you need it when you're down there to have that, well, the next game. But with Iraola, it felt like he was really implementing something, and Bournemouth, like, as a whole, just have been trusting the process, and now it's paying off.
What was the storm afterwards?
Oh, I don't know what was it called? I feel like it was called Keelan.
I love the names of the storms. Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Which one? Okay, I'm going to look up. Because they got into weird names.
Storm Babette?
Yes.
What's it?
Might be Storm Babette or Storm Kieran, maybe.
Yeah, that was
one of them.
Really?
My brother's called
Kieran. Because
they
kind of run out of the, you know, ordinary names. I feel like they've gone way down the...
Good to see an Irish name used in the old Storm
I think they should,
rankings.
Next time they go around, they should go to football managers or ex-football managers, like Storm Allardyce.
Yeah.
That would be a good way to start.
Could have been Storm Debbie.
I think Debbie was later.
Was it?
Yeah.
But Liverpool couldn't like get home, so they had to. They were flying, and they had to get a coach.
They had to get a coach.
Bournemouth is far away from everywhere, isn't it?
1993.
Yeah. Well, what is this? Champions League 2011.
Mm.
Mm. Anyway, sorry. Right.
This game. I mean, Bournemouth stopped Spurs playing in their own half. You know, kept Spurs to their lowest pass completion rate, other than the mad Chelsea game in a match this season. So they are very good at disrupting teams like Liverpool, and you know their centre halves are very good at sort of clipping balls over the top. And Liverpool obviously play a high line, and I think you know Dominic Solanke looks like a man reborn at the moment. So
Storm Solanke this weekend.
Yeah. So I think you know it said this to someone 20 years ago that Bournemouth Liverpool is a really huge match in the context of the top flight season. They'd have been confused, but they'd have also wondered why that's the only knowledge you'd have imparted after coming back from the future. But yeah, should be good.
Excellent. 12 goals in 19 Premier League appearances this season for Solanke, which is a marked contrast to his form when he was, you know, suiting up for Liverpool, of course.
I know, because he's obviously, he moved to Liverpool from Chelsea, so that's already like two big clubs. Now he's at Bournemouth. That season in the Championship, he just couldn't stop scoring. Then when they got promoted to the Premier League, he struggled a bit. But this season, it's just been completely different. I think I watched him score against Brentford, and he's got this energy like that was earlier in the season before the run really kicked in. But he's just got this energy like, you know, when you've got a forward running at the goalkeeper and you're like, they're going to score. Maybe he hasn't always had that, but it's just clicked into gear now with him, and he just looks like, yeah, if he's one-on-one or even there's a few defenders, he's going to get a shot on target and score. It's great to see, I think, because like you join Liverpool and that doesn't quite work out for you, then, you know, now his career, it feels like he could join a top six side again the way he's playing.
He's the reigning Premier League Player of the Month, first Bournemouth player ever to receive that accolade. Of course, Liverpool have one or two footballers themselves who can run at players and you feel like they're going to score, Akiva. Maybe not Darwin Nunes, but the others, yeah.
I mean, he'll try. He doesn't stop trying. That's, I think, the most exciting thing about him. And Liverpool fans will sing his name, you know, whether he does something good or bad.
He scored at Bournemouth, didn't he, in the League Cup? Was that the goal where he...
That was a goal, yeah.
He like, miscontrolled it and everyone laughed at him.
I think that was assisted by the Storm, actually.
And then as people were chuckling at his miscontrol, he just lashed it into
that was
corner.
Probably his... Like, there have been so many Darwin Nunes moments, but that felt like pure him because, like, miscontrol and then just absolutely whammed it.
Is that the player he's always going to be, do you think?
I think there's, like, a hope, isn't there, that, you know, he'll just sort of become, like, when Solanke runs on goal, when certain players, like Salah, if he's running a goal, you're like, something's going to happen. I think when he gets to that level of, it almost, like, reassures the fans, doesn't it? He doesn't quite have that yet. You kind of, like... You're more expecting him now to hit it at the goalkeeper. For some reason, it's just like the goalkeeper's there, he just seems to hit it at the goalkeeper. I think if he can like work that out and add a bit more sort of... I think sometimes when I watch him, it's not just about that. It's about sort of reading. You've got to be like almost like a snooker player, like Luis Suarez was one of the best at like if a defender's approaching the ball, he's already thinking of like it could glance off his head and I'm making the run. I feel like he just needs to like speed that up a little bit.
Yeah,
he used to look so deadly when you'd see him in kind of highlights in the Champions League for Benfica. He looked
obviously that season was that season was strange in that he overperformed his numbers. Whereas you know statistically he's one of the strangest players in the history of football.
Like, is that right?
His numbers are
already
his numbers are off the charts. Like there's no scientist can explain how it happens. Like how he keeps he
gets, how many have tried, Duncan?
15 in, yeah. The numbers he's producing in terms of chance creation and getting in positions is elite, but he's just not scoring. But it will come. I mean, I think he needs to start taking it round the goalkeeper more. It's a lost art, and I think he's very suited to, you know, going round.
I think he's so committed to just whacking the ball. Mm. Like, he just loves putting his foot through it, and I feel like he just needs to relax a little bit more.
Okay. Listener, you're thinking Darwin needs to evolve? So we'll move on. Speaking of Liverpool, former club captain Jordan Henderson in the news. He's bailed on Al Ittihad and is joining Ajax, which is an interesting move for Ajax, interesting move for Jordan Henderson. I mean, there are footballing questions about this. Like, does it mean he's still going to be in the England squad for next summer? And I think there's other questions about to what extent does this... back up what we thought about his decision to go to Saudi Arabia last summer, which I think, Keith, you wrote a piece at the time expressing about it, probably your biggest disappointment in football of recent years.
Yeah, it was. I think, you know, when you think of Jordan Henderson, like, one of the best memories I've got of him is watching him sort of collapse at the end of Liverpool 4, Barcelona 0, because he was just, you know, depleted of energies. Like, he used to give everything for Liverpool, and, you know, he went from a player that was, you know, told he could leave the club to transform and turning that around, becoming obviously the heir to Steven Gerrard's throne, and taking on the armband, all the pressure with it, and just becoming a player who was, for a long time, and still, even when he left Liverpool, you know, he's got this, like, underrated history of, like, what he was and what he did. And I think Liverpool fans knew for such a long time what he could give in sort of heart and passion, as well as skill. He could, you know, he was such a good player to press and pass and everything. So, yeah, I think when that come about, you sort of expected, I expected to be one day writing a piece like, you know, Jordan Henderson, thank you for your time at Liverpool. Like, you know, as a journalist fan, like, been amazing to watch him play for the club. And just, I think he was like the embodiment of, you know, exactly what you want from a Liverpool captain. And then, like, you know, obviously he was a massive ally for the LGBTQ plus community, and it just felt like a complete reversal of who he was. And it was like a, you know, betrayal, abandonment, like, whatever you want to call it. And yeah, it's just one of those moments, I think, that, yeah, just sort of hurt a lot of people.
I think we live in an era where we're just looking for sports people, not only footballers, but sports people who will stand up against things that are happening too fast, that are happening too quickly, and that we're not comfortable with, especially us as women. So when you see a player like Jordan Henderson that you always admire for the way he always spoke about things, and there's not a lot of them. And when you see them making decisions that are related to other reasons, it's just, it is frustrating. So to see him coming back, I'm not going to lie, it's a bit of a relief, because you don't have many players who speak up against things. And when you see players like him moving to places like Saudi Arabia, it is frustrating. So yeah, I wish him the best, and I hope he does really well at Ajax, and I hope we get more sports people just speaking out against things that make us very uncomfortable.
I think one of the things that people pick up on this week is that when he did make that decision, the justification that he gave for it was that he wanted, I mean, he literally said, I want to grow the sport in another country.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So to have then decided to leave a couple of months later really kind of suggests that was a bit of a fig leaf. But anyway, yeah.
There is this justification. And like, to talk about tennis, for example, you have Billie Jean King, who's such a big sports personality, and she was so important for women in sports in general, really. And she advocates in having women's tennis in Saudi Arabia. So there is the discussion, the argument. I'm not saying that everyone who moves there is wrong.
Sure, but that represents, I don't think Jordan Henderson in any way flew any flags when he went to Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
Quite the opposite. He basically, I think in most people's eyes, would say, no, I will sell out, footballers will sell out these principles that you might find uncomfortable, offer us money, we'll walk away from them. But anyway, he's walked back, and yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how he gets on at Ajax. Wrestling with the vagaries of the Eredivisie campaign, which currently has the former Dutch champions in fifth place after the disastrous start to the season. Wrestling with that and his conscience, of course. Next up, let's catch up on the FA Cup third round replays.
For most of us, January means New Year's resolutions. But for the footballing world, January means one thing: transfers. There's a lot going on, and to stay on top of every move that matters, you need the Athletic Football Podcast.
They were prioritising somebody like Mason Mount.
5 days a week, we'll help you cut through the noise with the most reliable reporters in the industry. David Ornstein, Adam Crafton, Laurie Whitwell, and many more will not only tell you what the deal is, but how it happened too. So make sure you don't miss a single transfer beat in January with the Athletic Football Podcast. Listen for free wherever you get your shows, and hit follow and subscribe so you don't miss a single episode.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Natalie, am I right in saying the FA Cup third round replays, this is all going to be new to you? Are you across the results?
Yeah, I'm across the results. Okay, yeah. Yes, yes. I watched Forest yesterday.
Did you?
I watched a little, yeah.
What an extraordinary tie that's been.
It was interesting. I was a bit disappointed because I wanted to watch Everton Palace, but it wasn't on.
Mm.
Yeah, but Forest did the job.
Were you the only person in the country after the first game between those two who wanted that to be on telly?
Maybe, because it wasn't that exciting. I was just hoping, like, the first game wasn't that good, so it can only go upwards from
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, the first game between Blackpool and Forest was very exciting, with Forest coming back from 2-0 down to force a replay, and then in the replay, they go 2-0 up, and it's Blackpool who came back to force extra time, and then Forest won it 3-2 at the death. Who they've got now in the fourth round is Bristol City, who were the big talking point, the Robins, after they beat West Ham on Tuesday.
Bristol City look wide open, but that's a bad pass there by Mavropanos, and that could be a penalty. But Bristol City are in, and Bristol City have scored, and they take the lead here. Bristol City, Tommy Conway's done it again.
Tommy Conway again, he pounced on that early error.
What a name, by the way. His name is so good.
Tommy Conway.
Yeah, it feels like he's like in Peaky Blinders or something. Tommy Conway. Yeah, I like it.
And another goal, because he scored in the draw last time out. Outstanding stuff for Bristol City, who will be facing Nottingham Forest then next time. What about West Ham, the only Premier League side to go out to a team from a lower division?
Yeah, they're struggling with important players not being available, because for most of the season West Ham had this very established formation, especially midfield and up front, because the back line they had a few changes, but you had Alvarez, Suchek, Ward-Prowse, and then you had Kudus, Paqueta and Bowen, and now they don't have Paqueta, they don't have Kudus, and they don't have Bowen, so you miss the spark and the lack of these unpredictable things that Paqueta offers, and you have the pace that Kudus has, and he was linking really well with Paqueta, and Bowen, he's been outstanding this season. He's delivering a lot of goals and the mobility he gives up front. So there's a lot to replace, to make up for there. And West Ham is just going to have to find a way.
Okay, you got Bowen out with an ankle injury. Paqueta, 2 months. He should be absent for with his calf problem. Kudus is at AFCON, and even Mikel Antonio is injured. So who they got instead?
Well, they played Danny Ings in the cup, which I'm not sure is ever the answer these days to any question. But I mean, I think the issue West Ham fans have is that they've got one of the best youth teams in the country, you know. And then they've got Divine Mbama, who only got 9 minutes at Bristol City. And I think, you know, he's a really good prospect. He's, at the moment, he's not willing to sign a new contract with West Ham, because I think, you know, David Moyes doesn't seem to trust the younger players. And it's similar with Roy Hodgson at Palace as well. And I think it's you know, when clubs are in that position, in sort of mid-table in the Premier League, it's a time to give them a chance.
Definitely. What do you think about the Hammers' prospects against the Blades away at Sheffield United this Sunday?
I feel they should be pretty confident to get a win. But when you were talking about Paqueta, like, this season, I need to keep a list of, you know, the players that you see and you're just like, wow, I've got to watch him play twice, I think. And, like, can't wait till the next time. He is an incredible footballer. If you get the chance to see him live, the amount of stuff he does that doesn't even make it into like the highlights reels is ridiculous. So yeah, I mean, that's probably not helping any West Ham fans listening, because he's out injured, but I just wanted to add that.
And Sheffield United, their last Premier League match was that 2-0 defeat to Manchester City, where they were completely dominant. But Chris Wilder was talking a lot about defending in a more courageous, braver way. And Man City was obviously a true test to them. And he's been experimenting as well with the players up front. So for the past couple of matches, he started Ozula and benched McBurnie. So he's getting to know his players. And he's very clear and upfront about it. And so, yeah, I'm interested to see what they can actually produce, because they've been struggling defending, of course. At the same time, West Ham hasn't been in the best scoring form. So I'm interested to see how this will match up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. West Ham had 4 clean sheets in a row in the Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. I mean, also, we should always respect Premier League games, fixtures with historic beef between the clubs. Obviously, this is the Carlos Tevez fixture. So I'm sure some Sheffield United fans will be mentioning that during the game to the away fans.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu. You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Football Content Awards International Podcast of the Year.
Other FA Cup news. Wednesday, Norwich won 3-1 at Bristol Rovers. That means they're going to be up against Liverpool in round 4. That's a fixture that's redolent of goals, eh?
Yes.
Liverpool-Norwich.
Luis Suarez energy. We've already mentioned him once this podcast.
Have we? Yeah. When did we mention Suarez before?
I think I mentioned him just for that ability of being able to just know where the ball was going to be before it was there. But yeah, it was a John Ruddy who basically, I think, didn't he tweet when Suarez left Liverpool for Barcelona that he was in line for like a cut of the deal? Like, he was obviously joking because of all of the goals. I think it was great watching those games, because I think they just kind of encapsulated what Luis Suarez was when he was at Liverpool, and even what he went on to do at Barcelona.
Yeah.
It was like he was just having like a mini goal of the season competition in every game against Norwich.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. It was. I mean, I think around 2% of the goals Norwich have ever let in the Premier League have been scored by Luis Suarez.
Good lord!
He just getting back on loan for one game, I think. It's a transfer window. Why not?
That Everton Palace game you weren't able to watch.
Read about it, saw the highlights.
You saw the highlights, okay.
Yeah.
And there was a lovely free kick from Andre Gomes.
Gomes with his right foot. Is it going to be Harrison with his left? Central position, 3 yards from the D. Free kick taken by Gomes!
Yes!
Oh, it's a fabulous free kick from Andre Gomes.
I was actually interested to see how Everton and Forest would respond after the allegations, but also with Palace, they've been in a very poor form, recent form, and Roy Hodgson being criticised for subbing Eze, and away fans chanting, "You don't know what you're doing." Mm. He's obviously under pressure. He said he was trying to take care of the players in terms of physicality because they have a very tough fixture on the weekend. He wished he could play all his players for 95 minutes, but that's not the case because they're facing Arsenal.
Mm.
Yes, they're facing Arsenal on Saturday. So, yeah, things are not looking great for Palace.
Indeed not. Everton, as you mentioned, once again charged with further FFP breaches. We'll hear more about that when that news comes through. But in the meantime, Andre Gomes, the first Everton player to score directly from a free kick since Luca Dean in 2019.
It's a long time. How long is it since, like, is there certain teams that have got... I'm just looking at you now, Duncan. But there must be, like, a team that just hasn't scored directly from a free kick for, like, longer than that.
Yeah, there will be. Off the top of my head, I can't tell you.
Okay.
But, I mean, in general, the direct free kicks are... Goals are a dying art.
Are they?
Yeah.
What is that?
I've actually got a chart somewhere which shows that they kind of peaked. There's a little peak around the late 90s. Sort of.
What? Juninho Pernambucano?
Well, and David Beckham, and it was very much the thing to do. And then obviously there was a little Ronaldo-inspired knuckleball revolution around the late 2000s. But yeah, these days, because it's, you know, not a very reliable way of scoring goals, teams don't do it as much.
I can't believe in those names I didn't include Sinisa Mihajlovic, the greatest statistically scoring directly from a free kick player ever.
Well, the greatest Premier League season for direct free kicks was 2013-14. Yaya Toure took 7 and scored 5.
Right. Yeah, they were like penalties.
Most of them were from the D, and he almost like invented a sort of 19-yard penalty that season, which was good. But yeah, I mean, these days it's clubs tend to do little, you know, clever little moves.
Mm. By the way, am I the only one who forgot André Gomes played for Everton still?
Oh, no.
Is that normal?
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he turned up against Tottenham and was like a revelation. I was like, who's this young kid? I was like, oh, wait. He's just been...
He was injured for a while.
He was
injured for like a long while, yeah.
Everton's prize for getting past Palace will be a visit from Luton. Luton, who made it through their replay with League One's Bolton, held at the fragrantly named Tough Sheet Community Stadium. That was on Tuesday. You'll be tuning into that, won't you? Everton-Luton.
Yeah, well, Luton actually beat Everton earlier in the season at Goodison Park. One of the, you know, I think that was the first win actually of the season, and it felt like a real turning point for them. And Everton has been based off that sort of energy ever since, like the chase for how it feels to win a Premier League game. But yeah, Rob Edwards went viral after the game against Bolton, because he's a very handsome man.
Just for that, really. Yeah.
So Luton just basically, you know, it was a post-match. I think the video is like 3 or 4 minutes long and it's got like 10 million views on Twitter. So I don't know how well it's getting on anywhere else. But yeah, it's good lighting, to be fair. He's sparkling, he's chatting, he's really relaxed. Obviously, Luton haven't won a lot of games this season, so it's a win, he's relaxed. I think they were going on holiday as well, which obviously it's always nice when you're going on holiday. But the internet has just like lost its mind.
Right.
With
there
how
was a poignant
was.
Note in your voice when you say it's always nice when you're going. Have you not got a holiday schedule for a while, Kiva?
No, I've. Do you know, I'm like, I need to book things in.
Yeah.
I'm still like, I've got dates like March, April, June.
Right.
I'm like, I want two like city breaks, March, April, and then I want like a proper week at the beginning.
Where
of
do you think you're going?
I'm thinking of Greece.
Because are you?
I watched Shirley Valentine the other week.
I see.
Classic.
It's always a good choice for me, yeah. Elsewhere in the FA Cup replays, Tony Mowbray got his first win as Birmingham manager in their clash with Hull. Birmingham will be at Leicester in round 4. League 2's Newport beat National League's Eastleigh. That was 3-1, and as a result, Newport will be welcoming Manchester United FC to Rodney Parade a week on Sunday.
Magic of the Cup, klaxon. There.
Yeah, and you know, would you be surprised? Would you? Anyway, let's finish off our FA Cup third round replay roundup with possibly the liveliest game of them all, which was, I'm going to say, Wolves' 3-2 victory over Brentford at Molineux. It featured, well, 5 goals. It featured extra time football. It also featured a fan being brought out of the stands to officiate. Magnificent story, this. This is Ross Bennett, who's a season ticket holder at Molineux. And he noticed that the linesman essentially became unwell and the fourth official had to stand in. But it meant that they were going to be without a fourth official for the extra time period of football. So he made himself known to the
classic
officiating
Ross Bennett, that,
not like a doctor on a plane, isn't it, or something?
Just exactly, like, yeah.
Well, but with TV, with thousands of people watching
you. Yeah.
No, that's confidence.
It's really confident.
That's another level of confidence.
Well, Jimmy Hill had done it years before. He actually refereed the game, famously. That's one of the Jimmy Hill stories.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I thought maybe they'd appealed over the PA. Is there a referee in there? But no, he kind of went, he's done his badges.
Do we know that the linesman was even ill? Is it just Ross Bennett just pushing his way in?
Possibly.
And how do you prove, like, you know,
you got your badges.
Maybe he's got, like, hey, yeah. Superman. He's got his
let me through. I'm a referee.
Clothes.
Yeah.
Well, you probably have a little badge just in case, no?
And so you anyway, don't have any other alternatives. It's the only guy with his arm up. And oh yes, yeah, just pick me.
I love the idea of like off-duty referees as well. Like, you know, yeah, like an off-duty police.
So in other sports, yeah, you will
in
see
in a train station. Get 10 yards, please. Come on.
I've seen, for example, the Chicago Blackhawks bring in a fan as a goalkeeper because they actually have designated people who play for lower league hockey teams who go along to their games, and if they I've seen a guy come out of the seats, you know, out of the crowd,
the bleachers
yeah with the Chicago Blackhawks and come on and suit up, and he did really well. They won the game.
Surely that negates, you can't have a random player in the, that negates,
they're designated, they have this in some way designated. But back to this guy here, this is his moment. Ross Bennett, so he had half an hour of Thomas Frank in his ear because he was the fourth official.
Well, he had half an hour. He added, did the added time. He could have added on 30 minutes if he wanted.
He said, I could hear VAR going on in my earpiece and I wasn't really sure what was going on. He said, the game was then decided by a Wolves penalty, which he presumably didn't step in.
Yeah.
See, that could never happen. Like, you could never ref... like for a team that you support. So that's like such a rare thing.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's incredible.
Although I reckon like Mike Dean goes to Tramier games just hoping for this moment.
Yeah, definitely. He said that it was the only thing was not being able to celebrate the third goal. I just thought I can't go running down the touchline if we go and win the game. But I wouldn't change it because it's an experience I'll never do again. Well, who knows? Well, anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. Ross Bennett.
Wolves making it past Brentford anyway with that 3-2 win. And Natalie, you actually came to talk about a different Wolves figure from that encounter.
After that, it's hard to follow.
Really? Because the guy who actually won the game was Mateus Cunha.
Yeah, it was. Mateus Cunha.
But did he really win?
Yeah. Who's the real winner here?
Yeah, so football probably.
Ross Bennett, start,
yeah, football. But Mateus was very happy as well, I imagine. Because he's doing really well at Wolves. And recently he spoke to ESPN Brazil about his spell at Wolves. And I was very surprised with how much he hyped and he... like the high level of compliments to Gary O'Neill. He said that his relationship with him is incredible and he's the main reason why he's playing so well. Because in the Olympics, Mateus Cunha, he played really well as a striker, but he wasn't always a striker. It wasn't his position. He prefers playing with more freedom as he's playing now at Wolves. And then he went to Atletico de Madrid and things didn't go really well for him because they were expecting him to be that striker. And then he goes to Wolves and Gary O'Neill is the guy who says, okay, you're not playing as a striker. I'm going to give you more freedom. And he's very thankful to that. And he credits Gary O'Neill as one of the best managers he's ever had because he's very intelligent in the sense of just understanding how to get the best out of the players, thinking about the team. So he's very pleased with the manager and the way he's playing, but that also depends on Hwang. And Hwang, of course, is in the Asian Cup now, so maybe he won't have as much freedom now without Hwang, which will be something to watch. But yeah, it took him a while and because he had that pressure of being the striker, being the goal scorer, and now he's just playing with more freedom and he's doing well.
He scored or assisted 8 goals in his last 9 Premier League matches. Wolves pulling up 3 wins in a row in the Premier League, winning this game in extra time as well, which means, as we were hearing from Tim Spears on Sunday, that they will get a 4th round Black Country derby against West Brom, a fixture which hasn't been played in front of fans for 12 years. Says Cunha, I played Brazil against Argentina, I played Real Madrid against Atletico Madrid, and now I really want to play Wolves versus West Brom and make history. He said those words.
That's great.
Yeah.
Can they be like really someone just print them out and like stick them to a wall somewhere? Like, iconic.
But I mean, it must be, it's going to be something special when that game comes around a week on Sunday or whenever it is, weekend after this one.
It's a big game, yeah. Remember one when West Brom went to Molineux and thrashed Wolves, I think it was 5-0, and Mick McCarthy got sacked. So, and then they couldn't replace him. And it was almost like they knew they couldn't replace him, but it was almost like losing that heavily to your local rivals. They had to get rid of him.
Got to do something. All
right. That's the beauty of rivalries, right? Mm. You can put Brazil-Argentina, the Madrid derby, and Wolves-West Brom in the same sentence, and it makes sense.
It totally makes sense. Yeah. Totally makes sense. Brighton-Wolves, not so much, but that's the game that's coming up next for Gary O'Neill's side. That's on Monday evening.
Longest character-based fixture in top-flight history. That's Brighton and Hove Albion against Wolverhampton Wanderers. 43 characters,
which is what
I want in a football squad.
What's the second most?
Probably Brighton and Hove Albion against West Bromwich Albion. I don't know. Probably.
I feel like that was your most Susie Dent moment ever.
Yeah. Well, interestingly, a few years ago, 2019, there were 43 touches in the penalty area combined in that game.
What's the shortest fixture? Hull?
No, they're Hull City. So it's probably like Arsenal, Everton. Something like that.
Really? Mm. That's disappointing.
Did your computer break when it was 43 touches in?
Well, I got very excited. It broke because I hit it because I was so excited. Yeah.
As for Brentford, following that defeat to Wolves, they're going to be at home to Nottingham Forest that Saturday tea time. And why is that game a keenly awaited fixture for Brentford fans? Why? Because Ivan Toney will be back available for the first time since the 6th of May 2023. Does he enjoy scoring against Nottingham Forest? Yes. Yes, he does. He's netted in all three of his previous Premier League meetings with them. Hmm. All right. They need a win, don't they, the Bees? Yes, they do. Both teams, in fact. I mean, I mentioned before, perilously close to all that business in the relegation zone. But
aren't you curious to see in which level Ivan Toney is coming back? Because, okay, he's been training with the rest of the team since September, but in the past few weeks, we've been hearing about, Arsenal and Chelsea and all these clubs interested in him. And he gave an interview as well, talking about it and saying that he still wants to play for big clubs and playing big matches. But at the same time, he wants to pay back all the trust and confidence that Brentford gave to him. But we have the Euros, so he needs to play in a high level because he still has hopes to make it to the Euros. If he wants this move, he needs to play in a high level, but it's 8 months. I mean, it's a lot, so I'm intrigued. I'm very much...
I guess a similar story was the Cantona ban. That was about the same amount of time. Mm-hmm. He came back, scored, I think, his first game back against Liverpool at Old Trafford.
Oh, yeah?
So it's an interesting one because your point is spot on. It's like when a player's injured, obviously they've got to build back up. But when they're just suspended, it's like, can you replicate that? I mean, there's been lots of videos of Toney scoring in, you know, B games and friendlies, but it's not quite the same
thing. Do they call them
like
BB games?
BB games, yeah. Jadon Sancho, not suspended, but very much frozen out at Carrington. And he came back and admittedly only came off the bench, but certainly had an impact on Dortmund's game last weekend. I, for one, reckon he'll come in and do the business.
Bag.
I think he might. The other game taking place this weekend, you mentioned it before, Natalie, it is Arsenal against Crystal Palace. The Gunners, who've had three defeats in a row in all competitions as their title bid has begun to fall apart. And it's all the Brazilians up front for, isn't it?
Yes. I'm very, very curious. Because I think maybe Arsenal is the team who can benefit more from the winter break.
Okay.
Before that, they were in a terrible form. And some of their main players, they just look shattered. Like Saka and Martinelli. And they are those type of players who really rely on their energy levels and intensity for the way they play. So and I think like just Arsenal, they seemed like the team who needed to you know, freshen up in terms of not only physicality but ideas as well. In some points, in some parts of the season, we saw Arteta trying to create new combinations up front with his up front players. It hasn't been working. Everybody's talking about the killer, the striker. They need a goal scorer. So yeah. What are they going to come up with? How high are the energy levels? Is the confidence back? There are a lot of question marks around Arsenal right now.
Okay. They had last weekend off, so you know, they might have a bit more zip to them, and they'll be taking on Crystal Palace, who are a bit zipless of late.
Yeah.
Yeah. Roy Hodgson's been managing for longer than Mikel Arteta has been alive. How about that for a stat? Will
never seen Roy Hodgson with Salt Bay either, as far as I know.
I'm not saying Mikel Arteta with Salt Bay, was that
last week? Yeah, when they were
did
away.
He?
Yeah. Oh, no. A lot of people were a little bit disappointed.
That's up there with Jordan Henderson going to Al Ittihad for me, really.
Yeah, it wasn't a great look, but you know, time to bounce back.
But Salt Bay is everywhere, so it's like, how do you avoid?
I think you can just say no.
Yeah, just
like
say
footballers.
No.
Yeah, I think they quite like it, though, don't they?
Yeah. Mm.
Calvin Phillips, no one's got him yet. No one's picked him up yet. Won't someone come and rescue Calvin Phillips?
I mean, we've talked about players coming back without having played. That would be a test.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm.
Such a weird transfer window this one's been.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had Timo Werner, and then we're like, oh, okay, things are happening, and then nothing.
Okay. But is for Calvin Phillips, that's been the situation for so long that I kind of expected that would be one of the early deals to get done.
Yeah, me too.
But nothing. Roy Hodgson was speaking about the saying that he can offer first
He's
team.
He's on a lot of money. At Manchester City, yeah, okay. Which makes it even a loan tricky.
Mm.
But yeah, we mentioned it earlier, but I think the threat of points deductions has made this transfer window quite bleak. But you know, there we go.
There you go. Palace have only won twice at Arsenal in the last 45 years. Yeah, that's just
It's true.
It's true. Excellent. Anyway, that's the Premier League. Now, still to come today, we'll hear from Maher Mazahi on a surprise-packed opening set of games at the Africa Cup of Nations. And next up, we'll herald the return of the WSL and ask if Chelsea's long era of dominance is finally about to end.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Okay, WSL returns this weekend after their month-long winter break. And a big game to kick things off, Kiva, is you've got Chelsea against Man United. That's Sunday lunchtime. Chelsea very much in the news over the break.
Obviously, Sam Kerr, ACL, sadness, another player. It's like those words, ACL, the three letters are just, yeah. But yeah, this game's massive, I think, for both teams because Chelsea want to obviously make a statement that they're going to continue to obviously be at the top of the table. Tim Hayes's, you know, final months now at the club, which, you know, feels...
Do you see that impacting their form at all, the fact that the manager's leaving?
Yeah, I feel like it will, you know, they'll all start to think, oh, well, you know, there's only so many games left. And Emma just seems like a manager completely committed to Chelsea. Like, obviously, she's, you know, going to be with the US women's national team, but she'll want to end on an absolute high if she can. And like, this era has been ridiculous, but obviously that Sam Kerr injury just sort of adds a little bit of, you know, doubt maybe for whether they can continue to be at the level that they're always at, because Sam Kerr makes a lot of things happen for them. But Man United really need a win because they're currently on points with Liverpool, 18 points, they're in fourth, they finished runners-up last season. Was it by a point or something? Like, so they were really good, obviously lost Alessia Russo and things like that, but they just haven't been the same team this season. And this game could really turn that around for them and then add that little bit of added, you know, sort of jeopardy into the title race.
Yeah, and with Sam Kerr and Emma Hayes, it's just going to be weird to see Emma Hayes last few months at Chelsea without Sam Kerr, because she played such an instrumental part in the spell that Emma had. And I think it can have an emotional impact, because when you hear players talking about Emma Hayes and everything that she's done, not only for Chelsea, but for the WSL, for women's football here, there's just a very strong emotional link. So it's kind of a cliche, the thing of we're going to play for our manager, but I think it is absolutely true. I think they are going to play for their manager for these past this last few months that she has at Chelsea.
Okay. 3 points clear currently, Chelsea are, of Man City and Arsenal. ACLs have been such a blight of this WSL campaign. There's been a lot of talk about why that is. Is there any kind of consistent explanation?
Yeah, I mean, they're just sort of like the studies are still happening, and then they'll say one thing, and then, you know, even like linked to the menstrual cycle, and then you'll hear another thing that sort of, you know, is something else, and it's just like you don't know. Like, yeah. It's kind of worrying. Like, if I was a player, not an amateur one, like I am, you know, you'd be worried going out and it happening. Like, Arsenal last season were just like completely, you know, but a lot of teams, it's happened to so many.
Yeah, and it's a lot of factors. It's just the calendar that's more intense, the level of football and intensity especially, and contact, it's all been changing. If you watch the World Cup in 2015, 19 and last year, you can see the differences. So the game is evolving, and the truth is there aren't as many studies for women's sports and women's physicality as there is for men. So they're just learning alongside and quality of the pitch and of the pitches and the calendar and how they're working things out. You know, that there is just a lot of factors that can contribute to, there isn't a final statement, oh, it's because of this, but it is a lot of things that are happening, and yeah, it's such a shame, really.
I feel like I'm now able to know when it happens to a player, because it happens that often. I'm like, I think they've done their ACL, which, you know, it's never nice to guess that, but you can kind of tell, because, you know, whether it happens on the ball or off it, the reaction is usually like, you know, hitting the ground, and then the pain goes away and they walk off the pitch or get stretched off, and then you kind of know.
Yeah, that's a strange thing, isn't it? Yeah. But yeah, the numbers, it's like in basketball, it's 3.5 times more likely to happen to women than men, and in football, it's 2.8 times more likely.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, as you're saying, you know, there's no definitive reason yet, but there's lots of factors that... And I guess the only positive is that we are in an era now where it can be repaired. You know, obviously players... Brian Clough did his ACL and retired at 27, because literally when he did it back then, there was no way around it. So, but it's such a hard road back from that injury. You basically have to sort of rebuild the knee and learn how to move it again, that it's just...
Yeah, and it's not always easy, for women who it happens to, because not every club, you know, will have the funds or fund the player. Mm. You know, when you go into like championship clubs and things like that, like how many clubs will, you know, make sure the player gets the operation within, you know, a good amount of time, and the rehab and everything else. So that all adds to it as well.
Sam Kerr, you'd imagine, will be well taken care of by Chelsea. This weekend, well, there's also Man City, Liverpool. City, we mentioned, 3 points behind Chelsea. That's...
Liverpool have been absolutely flying this season. Just well,
they had a game, the two of them, a 4-3 back in November in the Cup, Continental Cup.
Yeah, like Liverpool this season, there's just something. They're back at Melwood now. Do you think, you know, that's one of the reasons that, you know, Liverpool have bought Melwood, and obviously the women's team are training there. It's just like loads of different layers to it, but it just feels like Matt Beard's got them going in the right direction. They've become this team that maybe like Aston Villa was last season, where it's like, you know, the team that always comes up with the upsets, which, you know, from a Liverpool perspective is great to see. But breaking into that top four in the WSL is so difficult. So, you know, if Liverpool or any other club manage to do it, then it'll be just like an incredible achievement. Like, I think feel like it's, you know, we talk about the top six, like top four in WSL is pretty much on lock. And, you know, the first place often feels that way with Emma Hayes and Chelsea.
They're currently 7 points behind Chelsea, but they're only goal difference behind Man United, who are currently fourth. So big game that for Liverpool. Natalie, you're not going to it. You're going to go and see West Ham Spurs on Sunday night. Why?
Yes. There are a lot of interesting things happening at Spurs this season, because with the new manager, with Robert Villaham, they play a more possession, offensive football, brand of football, and it didn't always work well for them. For against Man City, for example, they lost 7-0. They lost 4-1, if I'm not mistaken, to Man United as well. But they really, they stick to their guns. And their last match, their last WSL match was the win against Arsenal, which was big. It was at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. And it just showed, especially the goal they scored with Martha Thomas, it showed the style of football they're trying to build there. That is very similar to what the men's team is doing, possession-based, and we're going to stick to it. And with West Ham, they haven't been doing well this season. They just have one win this season. But during this international break, they signed three players, and it was three really good signings, including Chrissy Mewis from the U.S. national team. So there's the expectation that they can show something different now with the new signing. So it's been very interesting, especially with Spurs. I've worked in a few of their matches, and it's eye-catching too. It's very entertaining to watch them play. It's cool.
Excellent. West Ham currently in a perilous position, 11th in the table, only goal difference away from the relegation spot currently occupied by Bristol City. Alrighty. So WSL coming back this weekend. Over in Africa, meanwhile, the Africa Cup of Nations is into, as of this Thursday evening, the second set of group stage matches. Let's catch up with Maher Mazahi after this.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Nafasi zuri tena tena za Richard Ofori.
Rodriguez! AFCON, everybody. First round of group stage matches ended on Wednesday night. There's been a wave of surprises, really, with Egypt, Algeria, Cameroon, Nigeria all drawing, two major upsets. The brave warriors of Namibia, who'd never won an AFCON game in 9 previous attempts, beating former champions Tunisia 1-0 on Tuesday. And on Sunday, Ghana beaten 2-1 by Cape Verde in stoppage time, sparking unrest and even a scuffle at the team hotel involving manager Chris Houghton. Hey, Maher Mazahi joins us now from the Côte d'Ivoire. Maher, how's your opening set of days been?
It's been good. So I went to the opening match, and opening matches at the AFCON are always very hectic. You know, there's heads of states that show up. There's a whole security apparatus that has to be installed. It takes sometimes 2-3 hours to get to the stadium. There are never enough seats in the media tribune. But overall, I like being at the opening ceremonies because it really sets the tone for the tournament. And then immediately after, I went to that second group of games in Group B, where you had Egypt draw with Mozambique and then Ghana lose to Cape Verde. Immediately after that, I organized a soiree for journalists, administrators at a local hotel over here. And we just had a discussion about how we could sort of develop African football, how it's necessary for us to be united. And that was really, really stimulating as well. And now I'm right back into coverage for the second match day of group stages.
Excellent. Well, so Thursday evening, today as we record, you've got some big games. Probably the most notable is Egypt, who stuttered in their opener against this Ghana team who got off to a terrible start. You're going along to that game.
Yes, I will be at the Stade Félix Houphouët-Boigny, which they nicknamed Felicia, happiness. It's an interesting one for a few different reasons. Egypt were really one of my favorites coming into this tournament. And in the first match, I think they made a tactical error, and that seems to be the consensus from the Egyptian journalists as well. They moved Mo Salah, not from the right wing, where he usually plays in a 4-3-3 and has, you know, a lot more liberty to play a little closer to the striker and get in behind space behind the defending line. But they actually moved him behind the striker this time around in a sort of number 10 role. And at times it worked, especially early in the match, but I think he had to run a little more. The humidity got to him, and he sort of faded as the match went along. And it's interesting for Ghana for another reason, is that Ghanaians here are completely and utterly apathetic. They feel like it's better to completely dissociate themselves from this national team because they do not want to suffer any more heartbreak, as has been the case over the last two AFCONs. They lost to Cape Verde in the opening match, and there's very, 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 very little belief that they can do anything against Egypt tonight as well.
Okay, one fan certainly not too apathetic, trying to get to Chris Houghton at the team hotel after that opening game defeat.
So it wasn't a physical altercation, thankfully. It was just a verbal altercation, which is obviously not ideal as well. Chris Houghton refused to address it at the press conference yesterday. He said that he's, you know, solely focused on today's match, as you would expect him to be. He's very much a gentleman, you know, very kind. I think everybody recognizes and acknowledges that. However, when I speak to Ghanaian fans, sometimes they want him to be a little more rude, a little tougher on his team. And even his center half, Alexander Djiku, who was man of the match despite them losing against Cape Verde, he had a fantastic match. He said that we need to be tougher. We are soft. That's what he said. And the indication is that it has to come from up above, has to come from somebody like Chris Hughton. So we'll see if that changes at all as the tournament progresses.
Okay. But the opening week has been a very exciting one in terms of results. We mentioned the big teams stumbling, not just Ghana, but your favourites, Egypt, your side, Algeria as well. But fantastic wins for Namibia and Cape Verde.
Yeah. So for Algeria, for example, they started off hot, just as Egypt started off hot against Mozambique. They seemed to take control for the first 30 minutes, and then they fade as their opponents sort of grew into the game. I'm trying to find a common, you know, denominator here. Some people think it's the humidity that levels the playing field, and that teams that actually try to play a high press or try to monopolize possession, as those two teams did, will tend to fade in the second half. Morocco yesterday, for example, against Tanzania, only had 52 to 48% possession. They did not play a high press. They actually let Tanzania have the ball if they were in their own third of the pitch. So I think a little bit of tactical intelligence plays into that. But for Namibia, that's their first ever win at the African Cup of Nations. And they're in a group with Tunisia, Mali, and South Africa. So they were supposed to be the minnows of that group. So for them to get 3 points off the trot, that's absolutely massive, because in this format of the African Cup of Nations, you can qualify to the knockout stages with just 3 points as the best third place team, as two teams did last year, Comoros and Tunisia.
Magnificent. Are Algeria going to bounce back after their point against Angola? And how unlucky was Baghdad Bounedjah? Am I pronouncing that right? Not to have that second goal.
Baghdad Bounedjah. Yeah. He slipped in behind the defense. It was one of, I think, his four offsides that day. There's a lofted ball that comes in over the top. He controls it on his chest, but he controls it and it pops up a little bit. And it's a spectacular bicycle kick that finds the bottom corner. Very, very unlucky. I think he was maybe a few centimeters offside, but it was offside. Algeria are looking to bounce back. They need to bounce back, but really they're playing against Burkina Faso, which are one of the most underrated sides in this tournament. Burkina Faso have made it to the semifinals in two of the last three editions of the African Cup of Nations. And, you know, in the African Cup of Nations, Didier Drogba told this to me a month ago when I interviewed him around the Ballon d'Or time. He said, you need players that can adapt. Adaptability and ability to overcome is one of the most important attributes. Algeria have players that usually play, you know, they're from the diaspora. They usually grew up in France. They were raised in France. Take a player like Houssem Aouar, who came through the Lyon Academy and played his whole life, you know, on perfectly manicured pitches. This is the first time he's played in a context like this, and we're not sure that he can, you know, handle the humidity, handle the little bits and bubbles on the pitch. Whereas Burkina Faso, they have like midfielders that you've probably never heard of, Ibrahim Blati Touré or Gustavo Sangare, who's playing in the third division in France. But when they play in the Africa Cup of Nations, they can make your superstars look really, really bad. So Algeria have a tough task ahead of them, but 3 points is absolutely imperative for them.
Okay. You're off to Egypt, Ghana this evening. What else are you most looking forward to from the next few days?
Just the lineup of matches that we have over the next 4 or 5 days is simply incredible. Today's Ivory Coast, Nigeria. So the hosts against Nigeria, who only picked up a point. You have Egypt, Ghana, which we talked about. Senegal, Cameroon tomorrow. Algeria, Burkina Faso, Tunisia, Mali on Saturday as well. And then on Sunday, Morocco versus DR Congo. These are all heavyweight matchups on the continent. So I'm looking forward to seeing some of the heavyweights to sort of find their form, find their rhythm, because, you know, preparing for any major competition, international football, is difficult because you only have sometimes a week or two to sort of put a system in place and to sort of find chemistry between players. And I think that as well can level the playing field, whereas especially if teams are looking to sit back and play for draws. But now, you know, they've been together for a little more than 3 weeks. I'm expecting them to find their form a little bit, and hopefully we'll see some of these heavy hitters start to score more goals and win these matches.
Magnificent. Well, you enjoy yourself out there, Maher, and we look forward to speaking to you again soon.
It's always one of the highlights of my tournament, speaking to you guys, so take care.
Maher Mazahi there. Look forward to hearing more of his adventures in the Côte d'Ivoire.
Yeah, just a reminder, if you want to have a look at some of the sort of superstars and next big things, up-and-coming players, you can go onto the Athletics AFCON radar and check them out.
Great. That's it for today's show, I think, Natalie. Yeah. You enjoy yourself. So you got Spurs, West Ham. Are you doing any Premier League this weekend or
yeah,
not?
Yeah, no, I'm with the WSL this weekend.
Boom.
Yeah.
Excellent. Kiva, where are you off to?
I'm actually going to a tribute dinner for Emma Hayes on Sunday.
Oh, really?
FWA. Okay. So that'll be exciting.
Well, yeah, she'll probably, if Emma Hayes and tribute dinner, she'll be moving all the salt and peppers around and the the hors d'oeuvre to illustrate some tactical thing. She can't keep her hands off foodstuffs. She's just really no. She, you know, explain tactics first, eat later. That's her.
Honestly, she like I wanted to be my life coach.
Yes. Yeah.
If she ever gets into that business, she would make a killing.
Strong personality, clear vision, full heart, yes. All that stuff. Boom. Lovely stuff. Thank you so much for being with us today, Kiva and Natalie and Duncan and Charlie and Liam in the booth today. And listener, you. So nice of you. We'll be back if you want some more on Sunday evening, perhaps Monday morning for you, with our review of what happens in the Premier League and other things too, like WSL. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.